When you need expert help and advice on issues affecting your business, NFU Cymru, we're here for you.
Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Hey everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 163. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I am incredibly excited to be heading up to Settle in West Yorkshire to talk to cheesemonger and owner of the multi-award winning The Courtyard Dairy, Andy Swinscoe. Andy, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Thanks for having me along.
That's all right. Really, really pleased to have you. Now, first thing I'm going to ask you, being a cheesemonger in Yorkshire and not too far from Wensleydale, how fed up on a scale of 1 to 10 do you get of Wallace and Gromit references?
We get an awful lot. I don't think it's as bad as the creamy, but we get an awful lot. Yeah.
I can well imagine. Tell us a bit about your background. You're from Cumbria originally, aren't you?
Yeah, so I was born and grew up in Cumbria. My mum and dad had a little country house hotel, and I grew up in part of that, like just one of those old school out-of-town hotels with a few bedrooms and a little restaurant. And so I grew up in that. Many years ago, but so I always had an interest in food. So my mum's side were a farming side, and my dad's side kind of ran little hotels. So they got together, and that was it, really. And so I had an interest in food, and that was it. That was kind of what led me down the route where I am today. But yeah, I grew up in Cumbria, and definitely consider myself a Cumbrian, even though we're definitely well wedded in Yorkshire now, where we have been for many years.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, your mum was from a farming family. That's where.
Yeah, so she was from her family, actually from Gloucester. She's from Gloucestershire, and they kept dairy cows, but it was a long time ago, and then also had sheep as well. But then she met my dad, and it was her dad's side, really. And then she met my dad, and then that all went down that route, really. Her brother continued the farming a little different route, and then ended up being head gardener. He went down more of the gardening routes. That was, you know, he took the farming side and went down. Ended up being a big head gardener within Windsor, and then botanics. But yeah, that was kind of the last of the farming was the generation above my mum.
Okay. And was there any cheese making heritage in the family? With any dairy farming? Did they make any cheese?
Yeah. So they kept dairy shorthorns back in the day, and we're very lucky that my great grandma, because in those days, the whole cheese industry has changed. But in those days, if you were a lady on the farm, you were expected to learn how to make cheese in certain areas, not in all areas, but in certain areas like Lancashire, in particular Gloucester. And my great grandma, she was a dairy maid. She married a farmer, a dairy farmer, and that was it. She was sent away to learn how to become a dairy maid. So they sent her to Windsor Castle, and she learned how to become a dairy maid. And they made Gloucester cheese. And the great thing is, I don't know why it was kept, but it was kept. We have her notes when she was training from how to be a dairy maid on how to make Gloucester cheese. So we've got all her notes, this dead thin paper booklet from 1912 on how to make Gloucester cheese that she wrote while she was studying. We're very lucky.
What an incredible thing to have. That's awesome. Yeah. So where did your initial interest in cheese start?
Yeah, so I worked in restaurants for many years. I grew up in like a hotel restaurant, and then just continued that, really. But went to, you know, I was young and went to the city. I worked in Edinburgh. I went for a really posh restaurant, and we had an amazing little cheese board and an amazing little whiskey trolley and all those little things. But I loved our cheese trolley. We used to wheel it around, and we were lucky. It was a good restaurant, so we used to visit suppliers quite a lot. And we went to visit the Errington family, who were just outside Edinburgh, who milked sheep. And I met Humphrey. It was back in the day, and he kind of caught my imagination. And I went back to our restaurant, and at that time, we only had two Scottish cheeses on a whole cheese board, because it was great fine dining, you know, it's a very posh restaurant. But everything was French. And so it kind of caught my eye. So I spoke to our head chef, and he said, well, I just can't get supply of British cheese. And you know, I don't think we mature it as well, and we don't think we have the farmers that are doing it quite as well. And so that was kind of, that really got me talking and interested. And I talked to our French supplier, and, you know, he's very French. The majority of our cheese board was French. And he said, well, if you want to learn about cheese, you have to come to France, you know. And I was like, okay. You know, I was young still, and I thought, well, I've got nothing to tie me down. So I thought, well, I'll go and do it. I'll go and do an apprenticeship in cheese maturing in France. And that was it, really. That kind of set me off on a certain route. But yeah, just chance, really. I always had a good interest in food, but that chance meeting of Humphrey Errington and then also speaking to the French supplier and him saying, come do an apprenticeship in France, that was it, really. And that set off a ball rolling that, you know, that inspired me. And you know, once I'd been to France and done a 6-month apprenticeship and came back to the UK, I had a level of knowledge and a level of experience in cheese maturing that there wasn't many people like that at the time in the UK. So it kind of set me up for a long time.
Yeah.
Which is good.
All I can think was how nice it would be to be in an Edinburgh restaurant now with a selection of cheese and whiskey. But you're obviously now highly experienced, and I'm quite interested in your taste. So not your taste in clothes or music, but how you taste the cheese. Is that something that you just have to learn and refine over the years, or is there a bit of natural talent with that?
I think there's a bit of natural taste in there, but also I think it's something you refine. So, you know, I look at my staff, and one thing I encourage them when they start to work for us is to taste as much cheese as possible.
Yeah.
Just when you taste it, it's a bit different nowadays, but when you taste up to a customer, have a taste yourself. And that way they start to ascertain what we're looking for from a particular cheese, and also start to improve their own palate. And they also start to notice differences, because there's great things about farmhouse cheese. And one of the great things for me is that they will vary batch to batch, as well as producer to producer. And it's about slowly but surely improving your palate. So, you know, I always remember the first time I went to grade cheddar. So, I mean, one of the things about farmhouse cheese that's different to industrial cheese is that you don't start off with so much standardized milk, you know. So yeah. I'm sure you're fully aware of things, all these. But when you're making on a farm level, the inputs change a lot more. You know, if your cows are on slightly different pasture, when you've got 40, 50, 60, 70 cows, if they're on slightly different pasture one day to the next, if it's a warmer day, the milking parlor's warmer, all the pipework's warmer. And, you know, all these things make a slight difference to the bacterial quality.
Yeah.
What they're feeding on makes a slight difference. Also the stage of their lactation. You know, if you've got cows in all at the beginning of the calf or the end of the lactation, all those little things mean that every single day within farmhouse cheese is slightly different. And differences like that get narrowed down by industrial production, because they take milk and they standardize it before they make cheese, which is really important. You know, if you want to make Cathedral City to taste the same every single day, then you need to standardize that milk. You need to add milk, fat, and protein. And then also you might have more cows which are fed on a lot more buffer feed. So you kind of get a more consistent milk, which means they can make a more consistent cheese. With farmhouse cheese making, because every day will be slightly different, the cheesemaker can try and narrow down some of those differences, but they won't fully narrow it down. And so one of my jobs is to go to the farm and cherry pick the ones that we like the best flavor from. So there won't be a massive variance within there, but there will be slight variances. And I always remember the first time we went to grade cheddar, and you taste like 60 cheddars, 60 days worth of production, and choose the ones you thought were the best. Now, not many people do that. Many people just pick off the market. You pay slightly less.
Yeah.
It's more convenient. You don't have to visit the farm. But we've always had a reputation for trying to do the very best from each farm. And part of that starts with the selection at the farm. And it is a bit of a pain, because you have to visit the farm and taste them all, which might not sound like a pain, but driving across the country is across the country and the time and investment. And then also, and tasting 60 cheeses. The first time I did that when I worked for a company in Bath many years, and we went down and did it in Somerset. And I can think, oh, I'm never going to be able to do this. You know, I just was like, I'm never going to be able to taste the difference between all these cheeses.
Yeah.
But then the second time I went, I was like, oh, I liked that one more than that one, and I had that one. And the third time I went, I was like, yeah, those are the ones I'm looking for, you know. And it is definitely, you build it up over time. And but there is a bit of natural within there as well. So I have, you know, 15 cheese mongers who work for me, and there is some who just I will trust implicitly to do that job for me. And there's some who've been with me a longer amount of time and tasted as much cheese, who have refined. You've seen their palate change as they have worked for us, but they still are not quite on the metal as somebody else. So there's a bit of, it's a nature nurture thing. There's a bit of both.
And do you have to be quite good at describing it? Like, is there a standard set of words you should use, or you know, because sometimes you can taste a really great cheese, but you're not quite sure, you know, you can tell, yeah, it's really creamy,
I mean, what do they call it, a lexicon? I'm not a big advocate of kind of, some people go into a lot of detail.
Yeah.
And for me, there's two reasons why we want to taste at the farm. One is that if we get an amazing batch, We want to feed that back to the farmer and try and find out why it was amazing, so that they can try and replicate that. But certain things, like they're not in certain flavor notes, they're not important really. It's more that it's got too high salt or it's too dry, or you know, things that they can change.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So so those are more important. And the other invitation is to try and cherry pick out the quality ones. And in which case for me, I'm not so bothered about describing it so much. It's more that yes, that's the better one.
Yeah.
You know, it's more of a scoring point system. Now when you're dealing with customers and when you're selling it online, it's slightly different. You want kind of that those words to go, oh, this tastes like that. But you know, but when you're trying to cherry pick out the favorites, it's for me is how good is it? You know, if that makes sense. Do I love it? Do I like it, or is it not really for me? And that's really where it sits. And I'm always wary, even with my staff, about explaining tastes to customers, because taste is such a personal thing.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason we do a wide variety of cheeses is, it's, for me, it's not about which is best. It's actually about the variety. Mm. You know, we work with, you know, certain times we work with 5 different cheddar makers, and I wouldn't sit here and say that farmhouse cheddar maker is better than that one. It's actually, oh, that one suits that profile, which is softer and buttery, and people like that one for that reason, or people like this one for that reason, and this one's more sweeter and waxy. And that for me is the brilliance of farmhouse cheese making. Yeah. We're trying to celebrate the differences between the farms rather than go, they should all be the same style. And people should, different people will prefer different ones, you know, and I think that's a key thing. That's a great thing we should celebrate.
For sure. So did you always want to have your own shop? Was that always your ambition once you got going into that world of cheese?
I think so. I think we always wanted to kind of have our own shop, and we always wanted to be kind of self-employed.
Hmm.
And I also think that I always wanted to work with farm cheese. So, you know, I love the nature of milking your animals on the farm and making the cheese on your farm. I think that link of the farmer to the animals and the grass means you can produce a better quality product. And I think the best quality cheeses are made on the farm. I also think the best quality cheeses, the farmer tends to make one style of cheese. They don't try and make 30 different types. Mm-hmm. Because they're working with variable things anyways, like milk and quality, and they need to concentrate on one recipe and try and nail that with what they've got. So I like the diversity in cheese. So I never really wanted to make cheese, but really wanted to support kind of what was a fledgling industry, it kind of stems back to that original reason why I got into cheese, was that I can always remember that my head chef at the time going, well, I just don't think there's not enough farms doing it, and there isn't enough people promoting and getting out to restaurants. And I thought, well, that's the link that I would like to be. You know, I think that when it comes to food retail in general, we're lacking that link between the farmer and the consumer. You know, and I always think that I always say to my staff when they start working for us, I want my shop to be like the butchers you used to go in with your gran, where you go in and the butcher would recognize her and he'd go, oh, how's she doing? How are you doing? Did you enjoy those sausages last week? Yeah. You like a lamb chop? Lamb's fresh back in. It's great. And see, you know, just knows the person, knows that is the experience. That is the dialogue. But that butcher, I mean, the butcher I had when I was growing up in Appleby also had the farm, and he even had the abattoir.
Mm.
You know, and he just knew everything. And I feel like we've lost that link. The retail link has been lost. And because of that, I mean, there's a rise of people are so disconnected from farming and where their food comes from. And I think that a lot of that is to do with the loss of the retail link. And the retail linker was kind of the person who would link the farmer to the producer and talk about him.
Yeah.
And there is more and more of them than there was 5-10 years ago. But that for me was what I wanted to create. And I didn't feel like there was a shop that was doing that, especially in the north of England, to the way that I wanted to do it. So when, you know, we moved back north for reasons, you know, we want to start a family and things like that. But at the same time, there wasn't anybody doing what I wanted to work for.
Yeah.
So we thought, right, well, we'll do it ourselves, you know, and we'll just try and champion those little farmers and tell their story.
That's absolutely fantastic, and really sort of strikes the right notes with me, because that's effectively something I've tried to do with this podcast over the last 3 or 4 years, is sort of tell those farming and food stories. And it's really good to hear you talking about the relationships with the farmers. You know, that's obviously something that's really important to you, the farmers that you work with. Is that a big sort of motivation for what you do then?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it definitely. Yeah, especially, you know, you see it even more this like past year. We kind of have put a lot of effort into. We always did put a lot of effort into working really closely with farmers. But you know, like this weekend, we cut. The only way we seem to be able to sell cheese at the moment is in small, tiny little bits, because the chef boxes. You know, a lot of the chefs are doing these food boxes at home, and people want little tasting plates. And it's very labor intensive and really hard work.
Yeah.
But for us, we've kind of still doing it because it's a way that we can move cheese. And I have to tell my staff, what's really important is at the end of this pandemic, we need these small farms making cheese. And if we don't just keep pushing cheese through, because, you know, the joke is, you know, as I'm sure you know, you can't follow a sheep. You know, you can't follow a cow. You know, if you want farmhouse cheese at the end of this pandemic, we've got to buy it during the pandemic, you know. And so we will, at the moment, we will do anything to sell cheese. And it's not about my business making a profit, but it's actually pushing that cheese through so that farmers are still making cheese, so that we've still got them in a year's time. But that link has always been really important to us. And when we set up our business, we set up with a remit just to do 20 cheeses. What we didn't want to be is a massive cheese shop or a farm shop or a deli that had loads of different stuff and, you know, oh, we sell a bit of this and we sell a bit of that. And we sell a bit of it. It was actually, no, we want to be very specialist.
Yeah.
We just do 20 cheeses that we know inside and out. Every single producer we visited, every single producer we bought direct from. And because we were doing 20 cheeses, we bought in a reasonable volume. So it made sense for the farmers to supply us direct. It also meant that because we were buying a reasonable volume, we could talk to them about flavor and profile and select and grade when you're buying a tiny amount of cheese, and it's not something you can do so easily. So having that link, and we just chose 20 cheeses that we really believed in. You know, we have an ethos in what we're looking for in our when we select out a farmer or a cheesemaker that we work with, and it was the more of them that could tick, the better. And, you know, so that's that relationship is really key to kind of encouraging those farmers who were making cheese, and also encouraging new ones to start going into making cheese. That's something we spend an awful lot of doing. One of the things I'm most proud of is I can think of, you know, four or five producers that are farmers that now make cheese that are a result of our business. And that's not me trying to say, oh, look me, I'm amazing. No, it's actually like that. These farmers have had to do that, and it's been hard and it's been difficult, and they've done the effort, but we've kind of been the catalyst. And that's something I'm really proud of. I'm more proud of that than anything, you know, because you've got farmers that have diversified and have got strong business and they make cheese. And I think that's a real thing that I am really proud of. So that relationship with the farmer is key for me. That is we are that link, you know, and having that link from the farm to the consumer. We effectively, I always say to my staff, we are their marketing budget. These farmers, they don't have salesmen on the road, they don't have free samples, they don't have marketing material. They rely on somebody talking about their cheese and putting their cheese in their mouth when they've never heard of it before.
Yeah,
and that's what I see our role as.
That's so cool. I mean I guess some of those producers have been producing cheese in their families on their farms for generations, haven't they? And it's, you know, it's often something that's been passed down for hundreds of years. I guess it really is being part of something, isn't it? Really, you know, it's quite a special part of our rural heritage, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I say that when I do a lot of public talks and tastings, and I say that, look, there's four or five great reasons for supporting farmhouse cheese, and one of them is social history. You know, somebody like Graham Kirkham. I love Graham Kirkham because when you ask him why he makes cheese, it's not because it's profitable, or, you know, it's not because, you know, it keeps money on his farm, or he's done market research, or there's a food trend or a fad for it, which are all good reasons.
Yeah.
He does it because his mum did it.
Yeah.
You know, and he did it because his grandma did it. You know, and I quite like the fact that they've always made Lancashire cheese, as far as he knows, on that farm, and they've made that style of Lancashire cheese. And I think that is something that is part of Britain's social history, which is worth keeping alive.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the good reasons. And the other good reasons, there's lots of reasons, but the, you know, potential to maximize taste, because you're making on the farm, you can look at your cow breeding and your feeds, your potential, because you add value, you've got more money to play with to farm in more traditional, perhaps, ways, which you wouldn't do when you're selling liquid milk. You are always trying to make it more profitable. You know, there's that. That's another good reason. Another, the brilliant reason, I think, is it keeps rural economies vibrant. You look at, I'm sure you might have had Johnny Crickmore in here from Bow and Bygo before, but he employs 15 people full time on his farm.
Yeah.
And prior to that, he employed three. He doesn't have more cows. He doesn't produce more milk. But because he adds the value on his farm, he provides an extra 12 jobs. Now, what dairy farm milking 150, 200 cows provides 15 jobs on their farm? It makes a huge difference to that rural economy, and gives that rural kind of economy an identity. You know, the people of that little town go, oh, this is where Bow and Bygo's made. You know, it's no longer his little farm has given his whole district, oh, this is where that cheese is made, you know, giving it an identity. I think there's lots of brilliant reasons, but social history and Britain's rural history is a key one.
And anyone who's been to your shop or to the website will realize that the history and heritage of cheese making in this country is very important to you. I mean, you literally have a cheese museum right there on the site. Perhaps you could just tell us a bit about how cheese making has developed in the UK over the centuries.
Yeah, I mean, cheese making is, at the end of the day, always comes down, like everything, comes down to economics. You know, everything, as much as we'd like to say that, you know, well, we're really interested in food in Britain and we're really interested in this. But so Britain always historically made cheese as a method of preserving milk. So the reason you, as a farmer, you made cheese because you couldn't get milk to market because we didn't have railways, we didn't have fridges, and we didn't have fast roads. So you made cheese in the spring and the summer when your cows are out of pasture, you produce the most amount of your milk, and you often sold it in the autumn, and it was consumed in the winter when the cows are mainly dried off anyways. So it was moved in the autumn when it was cool, you know, and made in the spring and summer when there was the flush of milk because they were out on the summer grass. And every farm made cheese that milked an animal because you had to. You know, because what you couldn't drink on your farm, it was the only way of preserving it without refrigeration. But we mainly made, and some soft cheeses would have been made for home consumption, but Britain definitely mainly went down a route of producing firmer, harder cheeses because A, they can get to market better, they're more stable, but B, we were very much a trading nation. You know, we very much, it was about the Commonwealth. So we made cheeses that we could put on the bottom of ships and sail around the world with. And that's why we got the Cheddars and the Gloucesters and the Leicesters and all those styles of cheeses, really, is they're drier, firmer cheeses. Now, in Northern England, where farms were a bit smaller, like in Wensleydale, they made softer, fresher, sharper cheeses that were designed for the working classes. You know, the Wensleydales, the Lancashires, the Cheshires, they're younger, they're sharper, they're cleaner cheeses. They're faster to make, they're faster to mature, they're cheaper to produce. They're better for the industrial north as it was. And so the hard cheese has really developed in both those areas as a method of preserving milk, but kind of northern cheese is a cheap food for northerners and southern cheese is as a generalist scheme, which is why they're all crumbly and acidic and caffilly to some region. And southern cheeses are more drier, stable cheeses to sail around the world with and also to kind of go into London and the like.
That's amazing.
But then, so that's how kind of British cheese kind of evolved as a broad line. And we didn't really go down the soft so much. We did have some blue cheeses. One of the interesting cheeses that's always really interesting is Stilton has always been a high gastronomy cheese. So all your other cheeses in Britain have always been made as a method of preserving milk, not necessarily more to provide sustenance. You know, they're either to provide sustenance in transport or to feed people as cheaply as possible and to stable methods of preserving milk. But Stilton's always been made to kind of be eaten in coaching inns or in gentlemen's clubs. You know, it's always been high gastronomy cheese. But then British cheese declined really for a few reasons. One, we went down that industrial route of food production. And also we wanted to feed people cheaply. And it's much cheaper to feed a populace on milk than it is on cheese. Cheese is a pain to produce. You know, you've got to milk your animals still, but then you've got to produce the cheese. You've got to mature the cheese. You've got all your money tied up in stock, which needs looking after and turning. If you're a farmer and can sell liquid milk and get a good price for it, then you should do because, you know, you get the money back faster. You don't have to do all the effort of making the cheese, you know. But so Britain really encouraged that route. And then also that's why farmhouse cheese making declined. And the Second World War kind of put a really big nail in that coffin for farmhouse cheese in Britain because it was kind of cheese rationing came along. And the government milk marketing board wanted to control cheese production and milk production, which kind of massively discouraged farmhouse cheese making, which is why it really declined and went out the window. But for other good reasons, as food, we produced more food and more milk as a result, and we fed the nation more cleverly, but we did lose kind of a lot of characterful farm cheeses.
Yeah, that's amazing. I read somewhere that we're right on the Cheshire border here, and Cheshire cheese was mentioned in the Doomsday Book. Is that right? It was very, very historic.
Yeah. So Cheshire is probably the oldest British cheese that they reckon, and for many years it was regarded as the best cheese. It was only... It's only really 200-300 years that Cheddar's overtaken it. Cheshire was the cheese that London wanted for many years. Different than modern day Cheshire is now. In fact, saying something was like Cheshire was regarded as like, oh, that was prime quality because Cheshire cheese was that highly regarded that if you said the phrase, oh, that's as good as Cheshire, you know, that was, and Cheshire was regarded as the highest quality cheese and Britain's most popular cheese for many years until, you know, 200-300 years when Cheddar has usurped it, really.
Right. Okay. We've talked about the importance of community and local communities to you as a business. You've got a brilliant article on your website, and I urge everyone listening to go and have a look, where you talk about how for every £1 spent in the shop, 40 pence stays within 40 miles. Is that right? It seems like such a fantastic...
Yeah, so it's great. Yeah, and it's a great benchmark to then try and improve. You know, that's the great thing about it. So there's a great, there's a fabulous farmhouse cheesemaker in America called Jasper Hill. and they have a big map on how much money they can keep within their local community. And we got the idea from them, if I'm perfectly honest, somebody suggested, look, because for me, I'm a big believer that the best quality food, I love selling amazing cheese, but who I really want to sell it to, well, don't get me wrong, our business relies on mail order nowadays and all types of things, but I really want to sell it to my local community.
Of course.
Yeah. I really think that everybody should eat good quality cheese. Mm. I think everybody, and that's one of the great things about good quality cheese, it is more expensive to make on a farm and produce in that way than it is industrial cheese. However, it's still not without the bounds, if that makes sense. It's not like it's posh quality wine. You can have some of the best cheese and quality in the world and you still get a nice wedge for £6.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, the best quality wine in the world or the best quality foods in the world, I'm never going to be able to afford, you know? So it's, so that's why I quite like it in many regards. And what I want to do is I want to sell more cheese within my local community. Mm. I want my little town to come and buy all their cheese from me. And then I want to buy all my cheese from farmers that make by hand in traditional methods. You know, and I think that I always say that I want my money to go around in circles, you know, and that's what I want, you know. And so I pay somebody else and they pay me and it just comes round. And that's the way it goes. But yeah, so and we found this thing from America about how they could try and invest more in their local community. And we thought, well, we'll do that. Well, actually, and it was a pain in the neck, but one of my cheesemakers suggested we do it. And we went through every single line of my expenditure that we had of a year. Mm. And we went through it and analysed whether it was in 40 miles or greater than 40 miles. And we found that 40% of everything, every single penny, if you spent a pound within our shop, 40p would go straight back into within 40 miles. And we thought that was a great statistic. Mm. But it also was a great way that we could try and improve that, you know, so we could try and buy more local stuff. And I'm not somebody who bangs a local drum when it's unnecessary, but in the more stuff that I can keep within my community, the better, you know. I think that's a really important thing, you know. I think, you know, and I think it's really important that we can try and support, especially seeing as with that 40 miles it, where we are, it barely touches the city. You know, and if you want to keep rural economies, you want to keep this place vibrant, you want to keep jobs in the rural economy, then you've got to spend in the rural economy. You've got to take that onus yourself. We can't rely on the government to forcing us to do what we want to do. You know, we've got to take that onus ourselves and just make a small difference. Mm. And that small difference is, you know, I buy all my presents for my kids from the local town. You know, I go into the town, the toy shop, and yeah, you know, we've still got a toy shop. We're very lucky, you know, but I get them all from there because I think that way, you know, I know the owners of the toy shop now and I know them quite well, you know, and I think that and they come and buy cheese and it's quite nice, you know? So that goes through everything we try and do within our business. We have a look at it and say, can we buy it within 40 miles? If we can, then we should. And what the thing that was really surprising was that when we started to try and do more and more of that, it's actually a lot of the time it was cheaper. Mm-hmm. You know, you have this idea that actually you source it from further away, but actually a lot of the time using the local hardware shop more, using all the local stuff more is cheaper than online. You know, it just it took me a little, you know, and so it was a win-win situation in that regard as well. But yeah, so and in terms of all the cheese we try and source, locally is something we look at. It's actually about fourth down on our selection policy, but it is something we try and look for. It does tick another box.
Yeah, and of course with coronavirus, you know, a lot of people are talking about supporting local communities now, aren't they? You know, it's really sort of brought that to the forefront, you know, that sort of, I suppose, because we've all been locked down and away from people and away from our communities, people do want to, I think, are more conscious of it, aren't they? And are talking about what ways they can support local businesses and communities as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's a positive that's come out of it. And it's a real positive, actually. And I think that, and for a lot of farmhouse cheesemakers, I think it's been a positive for them. A lot of them have really struggled these last 9 months, but it's been a positive for them. So definitely, I think that what I always say that the best cheese should be consumed in the region where it's made. Mm-hmm. You know, I always think that when you go to the cheddar region, you should eat the best quality. You should never have cheddar better than when you're in that town where it's made. Yeah. And you get that in France. You go to the Savoie region, you have Tome de Savoie, and it's the best you'll ever have. You go and have it elsewhere, you buy it in the UK, it's not quite as good.
Yeah.
And I think that in Britain, we'd lost a lot of that because I think a lot of our food, the best stuff, the nicest stuff, was drained into cities and went into the best restaurants. And that's not a criticism of being drained into the likes of London, but I, you know, the best Lancashire cheese, in my opinion, should be eaten in Lancashire. And that means I don't get it, then that's fine. But that means the person who's on holiday in Lancashire has the best quality Lancashire cheese. The person who's on cheddar has the best quality. And I think that a lot of farmers had seen the, had struck, because of the breakdown for me of that link between the retailer and the consumer, they were relying on selling their quality produce down into places where it was easier to sell.
Yeah.
Which is London and wholesalers in London, let's be honest. And I'm not, and I think that, and because it all, so it's being drained out of these rural communities, and the locals didn't know about it.
Mm.
You know, the local, a lot of people don't. I went to visit Appleby's Cheshire once, I remember many years ago, and I went into the local post office and said, do you know where this farm is? They met Cheshire and they're like, no. And it was their local post office.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was devastating because that local post office should have loads of that Cheshire and should be pushing out to all the locals, in my opinion, but there you go. Yeah. So but I think the positive coronavirus is that all those farms have lost that market. They've lost the restaurant market and they've had to go, help us local community. And they've got that link back, you know, and a lot of them have started selling direct again, straight to the consumer at the farm gate. And that link is really important. I think the best, you know, you want to, again, you can look people in the eye. You can walk down the road and you can look people in the eye and go, oh, they buy cheese from me.
Yeah.
You know, you see them within your community. And I think that that coronavirus has highlighted that. And I think that can only be a positive thing, that the best quality cheese stays where it's made. And people have that link to the farm where it is made. And I think coronavirus has helped that a lot.
Yeah. And mentioning sort of farmers selling direct to the public, you know, that has been happening a lot more over the last few years. And a lot of us are kind of dipping our toes into that. What would be your advice as someone who's very experienced in retail? What would be your advice to those farmers?
My first advice is don't take your focus off your core business.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because the reason that the best cheesemakers often don't sell that much direct. And I always give the analogy of a cheesemaker I worked with many years. And he then opened a shop. And his shop was amazing when he was in it, but his cheese was awful. And his cheese was amazing and his shop was awful. Okay. You know, he struggled to manage them both. And I'm not saying it can't be done.
No.
There's people who can do it. You know, there's a great, the Baron Bygood example is a great example as well. He sells a lot mail order and does a lot direct. And it's still amazing. And his wholesale business is still amazing. But don't take your eye off what makes your product amazing. And don't take your eye off your farm. But my advice is that, I would encourage people to sell direct. And I encourage people to have that link. But just talk to people. And I think this is one area where the farming community suffers, if I'm perfectly honest with you. And my often criticism of farmers is that they, and this is a, you know, I appreciate I'm on a farming podcast, but you know, they don't link up with the public. And the public, you ask the general public in the street their opinion of farmers, and it's not that positive.
No.
I hate to break it to you because it's partly them to blame. It's a lot of the media to blame, but it's also partly farmers to blame that they're not having that link with the public.
I agree.
You know, they're not having that discussion, you know, and they should be having that discussion. Oh, well, they're stuck on their farm and they go, well, this is our farm. I ain't got time to do that. You know, well, we need to make time. We need to make time as an industry to talk to the public and showcase what we're doing that's brilliant. That's brilliant for the way that we farm. That's brilliant for the meat, the quality, the meat, the dairy, and the arable stuff that we produce, because we're brilliant at it in the UK. And some of it we do perfectly. Mm. And we should showcase that a little bit more. And just talk to people.
Mm.
Talk to people. So that would be my thing is that, you know, and you get better at it. You might struggle with it initially, but, you know, I do a lot of talking, as you can probably imagine. So it's, but that's my job, is to talk to people. Sure. And people like a bit of crack, you know, they like a bit of banter. And then taste, and never be afraid of giving away samples. But when you give away a sample, don't just put a plate out of food for people to graze on, because that's what'll happen. They'll just have it as a free lunch. You know, what you want to do is, I always say they have to, now times have changed with coronavirus, but I always say they have to earn that taste. So yeah, I'll do samples, but you have to listen to me talk about my product. You know, so it's not just there for you to grab. It's like, here, have a taste of this. And then you break down the barrier because you're engaging with them.
Yeah.
And you're not saying, but don't worry if they don't buy it. But then you can break down the barrier. You can talk about your product and talk about what makes your farm difficult and special. And I think we were talking earlier on about tastes and flavors. I wouldn't so much tell the story of what your product tastes like. I would tell the story of your farm.
Yeah.
This is my sheep. This is my family. This is me. This is my kids. Mm. People buy into that more than my lamb tastes better because of this.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. They buy it to more than, actually, this is my family. When you buy lamb, you buy from this family.
Mm.
This is how I keep my sheep. You know, that is more important, that background and story of your farm, rather than the flavor is important. It's why people come back. But why people do the first purchase, in my opinion, is because of the story of your farm and you and your family. People want to buy from families. You know, they want to buy from places with identity. You know, that's why the multiples, when you go into the supermarkets, they have pictures of a farmer next to a cow. Because they're aware of that. People want that visual connection. Whereas you actually have that story. There's no, you don't need the marketing bump. You just need to tell your own story.
Mm. Okay, that's fantastic advice. Well, obviously, in the midst of the coronavirus crisis, when we're recording this, we're all locked down. We're all fed up of it. How difficult has it been for you as a retail business?
I mean, yeah, well, when the coronavirus first hit, and we lost about, we reckon in the first week, we lost about 70% of our trade, and then we lost the other 15% with about a week later.
Okay.
We are an out-of-town location. We relied a lot on commuting traffic. So we'd have regular trade, but we had people driving past us commuting, and that's gone. And then in summer, we had topped up with tourism, which is also gone. And so that kind of meant that, you know, we went down to doing, you know, less than 100 quid in our shop, you know, and we, at the time, we employed 21 people, you know, so you can't keep a business on that. So, you know, and I think that the farmhouse cheese industry also massively struggled because it mainly went, I think that we didn't realize how much went into restaurants, how much food went into restaurants, and how much that specialty food, you know, that top end food went into restaurants and didn't have a link to retailers. And then the retailers that did have a link to, like me, rely on an experience. People come to my shop for a taste and a chat, you know, and that's what it is. And people don't want a taste and a chat now, you know, not at the moment, you know. So we really struggled initially. But what it did show really well is collaboration and how that can work together. So we just had to think a bit outside the box. So we teamed up with numerous other cheesemongers, you know, people who you might say, we both sell online, we both sell a similar product. You know, you might say we're competitors in many regard.
Yeah.
But we were all aware that the industry was going to collapse if we didn't do something. So we teamed up all together as to have a united voice to journalists, to chefs, and go, look at this. If you don't support these farmhouse cheesemakers now, we're not going to have them. Yeah. And because of that, we got a lot of good publicity, which meant the mail order turned around a little bit, which means that a lot of farmers could clear surplus stock. A lot of farmers, we also weren't afraid to give away stock. You know, like I remember one guy was giving away cheese to the milkman. So every milk delivery got free bit of cheese, and because he was going to throw it anyways. Yeah, you know, it was that ripe that he was going to throw it anyways. And he's got a lot of business off the back of that because everybody tasted his cheese. You know, so it was a free way of marketing.
Yeah.
Effectively, well, not free, but, you know, it was only the cost of his product. And so it was kind of very challenging. And we're still, retail-wise, it's still dire. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of restaurant wholesale, which is obviously all gone as well. But like all businesses, we were very lucky that last March, we almost closed, like everybody did in the first lockdown. We almost closed, but we had a little bit of we have a monthly cheese subscription. And I knew that I could do that with one or two members of staff. So we thought, well, we'll get that out of the way. And then, which was like next week, and then we'll close for a period. But by the time we got that out of the way, like mail order was starting to tick in a little bit, and we kind of restructured a little bit. Everybody was for load, but we thought, actually, we can carry on doing mail order. And then we had this conversation that we should try and change our business as if coronavirus is going to last for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And that was the conversation we had last March with my wife. And it's like, well, let's pretend that it's going to last a long time.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? Rather than pretend it'll be gone in 3 months. Mm-hmm. And it was a great decision at the time because we decided that we had to change the way our business worked. And we said, if it only lasts 3 months, brilliant. We'll go back to how we were. Yeah. But, you know, so we ripped out our cafe. We ripped out our museum. We spent a lot of money when we didn't have any money coming in, you know, to put in a new, bought some containers and put in a new packing line so we could social distance everybody. And, you know, and we just spent money when we had no money. We put in an outdoor cabin for click and collect and also for a cheese vending machine and, you know, just to kind of maintain some type of way that if this was going to be around for a long time, we'd be a stronger business.
Yeah.
And it was the best decision we've ever made because, you know, it was a difficult month and we spent a lot of money, which we didn't have. But at the end of that, we then had a business which could maybe survive the coronavirus rather than waiting for everything to reopen.
Yeah.
And then the other thing we did is we realized that what was key to us was that link with the public. Our cheeses nobody had ever heard of them. So that's why they struggle to sell in supermarkets, because why are you going to buy something that sits next to an industrial product that's more expensive? You know, you can every product's won an award. You can put an award-winning label on everything. You know, so it was kind of like, well, the link traditionally was us talking about it and tasting it out, and how do we build that back up? And for us, one thing we started doing in April last year was interactive tastings online, and that's really transformed our business. Now it's which is 60% of our business now, is interactive cheese tastings. You know, we do a lot of corporate. We do, I do four public ones a week. Every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, I sit at 7 p.m. and talk for an hour about cheese, and people get a different selection every week. You know, we rotate it, so it's interesting. So we'll do like soft and smelly cheeses, and then we'll do like just hard, we'll do traditional British cheeses, then we'll just do blue cheeses, and we talk it really into the detail because that's what we were skilled at. We're very experienced. We know an awful lot of cheese. So we thought, well, that's our skill set. How do we promote that in this new world? And the interactive cheese tastings. And so we changed. And now that's our business. It's me sitting in front of a screen talking about cheese to people, about the little selection they've got. But that change is a pain in the neck because we sell only little bits of cheese. because, you know, where people used to buy a big chunk, they used to do these little tasting plates. But, you know, it's kept all my staff working. It's kept us working. And it's introduced us to a lot of new people. There's a lot of people who go on these and then they come and buy cheese afterwards. So we had to change and we had to find a different way of getting across our story and talking to people about cheese they'd never heard of and farms they'd never heard of because nobody was coming in the shop. And it's very difficult online to sell a product like that. You know, it's very difficult. Everybody can write, this has won an award, this is artisan, this is farmhouse. But to actually sell that experience, you know, without tasting, and to sell that farm without tasting was something we were struggling with. And the Zoom tastings have really allowed us to do that.
That's
been positive to come out of it for us.
For sure. Well, I was part of one of those that you did for the British Guild of Agricultural Journalists last year, and it was a really lovely shared experience, you know, which we're all missing out on at the moment. Obviously, I mean, do you enjoy seeing people's reactions and how they react, and is that something that's
Yeah, because I mean, one of the things I love about cheese, I love. There's three or four things I love about my job. I love working with small farms. I love the people we buy cheese off. I love visiting them. I love talking about cheese. I love talking about their farming methods. I love trying to influence people a little bit in terms of changing. And I love the other thing is I love my product. I really do love cheese. But the other thing is I actually enjoy being a retailer. I enjoy talking to people about cheese. I enjoy people coming in and introducing new things and talking about cheese and have a little bit of laugh about it. And that had gone, you know, and that's why I love retail. And I think that one of the things that's come out of coronavirus, I'm going off a tangent, sorry, but one of the things that's come out of coronavirus for us is how much we love retail. And the rest of the world is saying retail is dead. You know, the online is the future. Yeah. I know for a fact, as soon as I can do more retail, I'll be doing more retail, because I think that link between people talking about a product and buying a product when it's done right is brilliant. You know, and it's actually the most cost-effective part of our business. But also, you know, it's that retail experience, if you get it right, is amazing. And I think it's something that we really love, and it's something we put a lot of effort into. And it's something we're going to continue to put a lot of effort into, because when people come to a shop and they love it, they come back time and time again.
Sure.
And I think that, so online does have some advantages, but it also has a lot of disadvantages. But the advantage of the Zoom tastings is then you can see people and you can talk to them. And it's almost like a retail experience.
Yeah.
But not. So, so
as close as you can get, I suppose. I mean, you do sell an amazing range of cheese gifts. And again, I urge people to go on the website and have a look. I mean, you've even got a Valentine's Day selection on there if listeners want to get orders in quick. You must be really pleased with how people have been buying these. You know, people have ordered them for sort of friends and loved ones as sort of way of saying, you know, We haven't forgotten about you. We care about you, haven't they? And things like that. That must be a nice thing.
Yeah, I think that the pandemic has brought out some of the best in people. I think that people have bought gifts for other people.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, it's always easy to hang on the negatives, but you know, there's a lot of niceness and openness and a lot of support. A lot of support for, and what is, there's been a lot of support for the farm. When people realized that the British cheese industry was struggling, there was an awful lot of support. People did put their hand in their pockets, and made a difference by spending money and buying farmhouse British cheese. And I think that, so it's been nice to see that support. It wasn't like we were forgotten about. And also nice to see our support from our regular customers. You realize that when they come into your shop, they buy into you and your family and your business and your staff. And I think that's people, if you build a relationship with a customer, they actually don't just come to buy cheese. They come because they like buying from you. And I think that relationship with the customer is brilliant. That's more difficult to break because they're not price orientated. They bought into you as a company or as a person. And we've seen that it's underlined it more in the pandemic, because we get an awful lot of messages and awful lot of letters from people who want to support us, and we haven't been able to visit you because of this, but we're thinking about you and we can't wait to, and that's a really nice thing.
Yeah. So what's your best selling cheese?
Now, it really pains me to say this as a Yorkshire cheese shop, but it really pains. But it is Lancashire cheese. But I think that's because my wife's from Lancashire, and so everybody who comes to the door, she forces it on her. There you go.
Yeah. Do different cheeses come in and out of fashion at all? Do you see sort of, I don't know, big surges of interest in one or another, or something?
I mean, chefs can make a difference when they use it on TV, as I'm sure you're aware. From that, I think that Britain has got more adventurous.
Okay.
I think that it's selling less hard classic British cheese and more continental styles. But yeah, I think that has happened over the last 10, 15 years. People have started to look more at those soft, smelly sheep's goats. I think that has become more of a trend. But yeah.
Okay. You mentioned at the start that if you wanted to learn about cheese, you had to go to France.
Yeah,
but now there's been so much more interest in cheeses in Britain and farmhouse cheeses and places like yourselves. And do you think that's changing now in people's consciousness?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a gradual effect. But I always say that we need more cheesemongers. We need more people like me. And we actually, in my opinion, we need more good butchers. There's very few. A lot of butchers are classic old scale butchers, but you need more good butchers which are really connected to where their food comes from and can talk about you, the farmer, where it's made from. Because people are interested in that; they want to know that. But the more we need more good people like that to form that link, and until we do, then farmers themselves need to be making that link themselves, because there's not enough good retailers who are prepared to do that, to talk about that link. But yeah, I definitely think there's been more of an interest in that style.
Okay. And of course, I have to ask you this, and I guess you asked it in every interview you've ever done. What is your favourite cheese?
It's a good question. It's like asking, I'm sure, Will, do you have a favourite child?
Yes, the youngest.
Yeah, well, it's like asking, it changes, it really, really changes. I think that luckily with me, a lot of the time it is also related to the person, So I love Kirkham Lancashire because I love Graham. Mm-hmm. He's such a characteristic man. I love St. James because I love Martin. I just love everything about him and his business and Nicola as well. But it changed throughout the year. So St. James has just come back in season, which is soft sheep's milk. And this time of year, I just love it because I haven't had it for such a long time.
Yeah.
We haven't had it throughout the winter. So I'm loving that at the moment. But then after I've had it for a few months, then I'll get a bit bored of it and I'll move on to, then spring will come and we'll start to get some new goat's milk come through and I'll get really into that. And then in the summer, I really like camembert styles with crusty bread sitting outside, a glass of cider, chilled cider, can't beat that.
Yeah.
And then the winter, winter, like fire and blue cheese, it just goes really well for me. I don't know why. Sitting in front of the fire with a hunk of blue cheese and a bit of red wine, it's just great. So it changes throughout the year. The cheese I eat the most of, and again, it pains me to say this, is Lancashire. And a traditional farmhouse Lancashire made by Graham Kirkham. I have it for breakfast. I have it with cheese sandwiches. I have it with cheese and toast. I have it in a cheese plate. It's just such a good all-rounder.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say it's my favourite cheese, but traditional creamy Lancashire is the one that is the staple.
Okay. And then before it's we start...
answer. If I'm honest.
No, I mean, that Kirkham's Lancashire cheese is awesome. I must admit, it's absolutely fantastic. But before we start to wrap things up now, if people listening do want to get an order in, if they want to support you, where can they find
you? Yeah, so, I mean, we're online at thecourtyarddairy.co.uk. And the Zoom cheese tastings are worth a look, because if you want to learn more about cheese, that we really do go into detail of it. You can order online. But on the side, I really would encourage you, if you've got a good local cheese shop, who sells farmhouse cheese, the word farm isn't protected, but look for raw milk cheese. I think that's a really important thing we need to keep going. It's difficult to do. Look for products that are actually made on the farm by independent farmers. I'd encourage you to buy that, and encourage you to keep your local retailers alive. As much as I'd love to sell you cheese online, the more cheese... diversity is a great thing. It provides a stronger industry for all of us, but there you go.
Fantastic. Okay. Right then, we will wrap this up with the five hard-hitting quick questions to finish in the traditional way. What is your all-time favourite song?
difficult one, but I do, it pains me to say this when I didn't really, but the Rock and Roll Star by Oasis was the first one that came to mind when I thought of it. So
brilliant. Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. What's the best accompaniment to have with cheese?
Good question. I always go for something fairly neutral. If the cheese is good enough, you should have something that's not going to overpower it. So there's nothing better than a crisp apple, you know, a traditional russet or a Cox. Aside from that, there's a fabulous little damson, old-fashioned, you know, they call it fruit cheeses. The damson fruit cheese. Yeah, it's quite floral and quite nice. I quite like it.
Okay. I mentioned in the intro that you were multi-award winning, and you really are, having won countless highly prestigious awards. What have they meant to you as a family?
I mean, it's nice to get recognition. So some mean more than others, but, you know, like especially the ones where you haven't entered, so to speak, and you just get picked out, and they're really nice. We got a Golden Fork last year for our contribution to British cheese, which was completely unexpected. Mm. So that meant an awful lot because it was unexpected, and it made a huge kind of, it was the time when times were hard last year, it made a huge difference to kind of how we were feeling. And it was, that was a really great one.
I'll bet. What's the best cheese-related joke? There's loads of cheese jokes and puns,
we once the most visited page on our website is the cheese jokes webpage. And many years ago, we ran a competition to come up with a new cheese joke. And it was a bit of national publicity we were going for, and we got it. And so, you know, I always like this one because it's not that well known. Is that how does actually, I'll go for it. I like the mirror one. What does the cheese say to itself in a mirror? Hello, me. That's quite a good one. Yeah.
I'm going to say that to my kids after.
Yeah.
And lastly, then, to finish off, what's the best cheese-related social media account that people should be following, apart from yourselves, of course?
There's three that I'd say are really good to follow. Martin Gott, who makes St. James cheese, is opinionated, which I quite like. I quite like somebody opinionated. Might not always be right, but he's worth following for his opinion at least.
I like following Martin,
Martin's really good. There is Instagram, Holden Farm Dairy. I really like the way that they farm. I really like what they do up there. And then there's an interesting one called Milk Jam. Now, it changes a little bit, but she's a cheesemaker trying to reinvigorate Britain's territorial cheeses, encourage farmers to make more British territorial cheeses. So Milk Jam is quite an interesting. Milk Jam London, I think it is. I think it's called Milk Jams, but that's a really great one as well.
Brilliant. I'll check that out. Andy, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us tonight. It's been absolutely fantastic. Good luck with everything you're doing. And when all this is over, we will try to come up for a visit. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see the cheese museum you've got there.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. We'll appreciate it.
Cheers, Andy. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. I hope to see you next time. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.